Hello, my name's James. I write for a website called The Bristol Activist, which is it's a news blog for progressive protest activism and resistance in Bristol. I actually started the blog just a few weeks ago now, and it really came from the with an intention to I suppose do two things. One is to try and connect activists from diverse movements. So from my own background in activism, and I know from speaking to other activists, there's a real sense that sometimes different groups, different movements can become very siloed. They don't see outside their own little bubble, and so you don't get those connections that really would help amplify the common struggle that we all face. And the second reason that I started it was to just try and motivate people to get involved in activism. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not a it's a strange thing, really, to do that, to put yourself in the kind of activist space, to take to the streets, to make yourself uncomfortable in many ways, to seek change and to seek justice. So the website's about studying the reasons people have to do that, in the hope that by showing that publicly, others will be motivated to do the same, to see in themselves, the potential for activism, and then to bring that out and make change in the world.
So yeah, but the thing is, we live in a democratic country. We elect people to make these decisions. I mean, the decisions are made because people have elected those, people to make them. We don't need people out on the streets, banging tin cans or standing in front of the cars, surely.
I mean, I think a slight overview of history would show you the need for protest. I mean, everything from voting rights for women, but also for men, has come from protest. Many of the rights that we enjoy, civil rights, civil liberties, have come from protest. If it weren't for protest, we wouldn't have them. Simple.
What about the different sorts of protests that we've got going on in Bristol at the moment? Because there seem to be a few specific groups. I mean, you've got the Kill the Bill, which is about the well, it is this police crime public order. Well, it's not a public order bill. No, it's Courts and Sentencing Bill by Priti Patel, which is doing two main things. One is criminalising trespass. So if people are staying on someone's land, they can be actually arrested and that sort of thing. But it's also stopping the right to protest. So that's one lot. You've also got obviously the climate people, the Extinction Rebellion people. You've got also the anarchists who are, really just they just see the democratic process as illegitimate. It is not working, and that people have got to kind of make their own decisions instead. You've also got Black Lives Matter. I just wonder, we've got quite a that's four just to start with. And I wonder what if you think I'm right in pointing out those four and what the similarities and differences might be.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, you've hit on four of the biggest themes that kind of motivate protest today, not just in Bristol, but around the country and even around the world. These are issues that are on a lot of people's minds right now, climate justice, social justice, and racial justice. So we do have some very impressive movements working in those spheres. I mean, in terms of similarities and differences, I mean, you could talk all day. I mean, I suppose personally, I see the similarities in just lying in the fact that all these different areas are part of the same struggle. You can't achieve climate justice without racial justice. You can't achieve racial justice without social justice, and you can't achieve social justice without climate justice. They're all part of a kind of a wheel. They're all connected together, and it just moves from one to the other. So different people are working in different areas, and that's absolutely great. But we're all part of the same struggle.
What do you make of the last few weeks? Because we've had a whole raft of protests, particularly around the Priti Patel bill, the Kill the Bill protests, and also around the travellers. Because there's been quite a lot of protests, but not all have got equal coverage. I mean, for example, the Kill Bill protest Sunday a few weeks ago went all around the world. I mean, literally, because there's a police car, I suppose, on fire. Mm. Even friends of mine in New Zealand were phoning up and saying, asking me if I was okay. But anyway, I just wondered, you know, what you make of these, particularly these ones which are very confrontational, where you see a lot of riot police turning up.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. So the presence of riot police has faded over the course of the protests. So there have been 9 large scale Kill the Bill protests now, and the last, I'm trying to remember from, but I think the last 4 or 5, there hasn't been a significant presence of riot police. So that dynamic has faded somewhat over time. But in terms of Kill the Bill more generally, I mean, I think from having, you know, been to all of those protests, I think what's motivating people to take part is, I mean, it's opposition to the bill in itself, of course, but it's also just that deeper sense of not being listened to. You know, I mean, for me, I really feel that the Police Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, as you mentioned, it's an attempt to silence dissent. You know, it's an attempt to make certain points of view and certain voices illegitimate, essentially by definition, so that the government doesn't have to face dissent. And it's come at a time when so many people were already feeling that they didn't have a voice, that they were being silenced by, you know, whether it's you know, a democratic system that many people feel doesn't represent them, or whether it's, you know, a patriarchal system that again oppresses certain people, or a racial system that oppresses people. You know, so many people felt that they didn't have a voice. And then this bill has come along and kind of just summed it all up. You know, it's one piece of legislation that really hammers home the point to all of these people that you do not matter. You do not have a voice. This government doesn't care about you, which is why I think it's brought so many people out. It's united people. You know, if you go to the Kill the Bill protests, it's not one, there's no like one movement. It's just, it's lots of different groups, lots of different people, all kinds of backgrounds and motivations, which is what's so great about it, really. So yeah, I think it's done a lot. It's done a lot for protest in Bristol. It's got a lot of people involved in protest in Bristol. And it's a very, very exciting time.
What about the elections? Because we've got the local elections mm-hmm. coming up. Do you think it's, number one, do you think there's any point in voting? And secondly, who do you think we should vote for if we want to change things?
Well, I mean, I think there's absolutely a point in voting. You know, I think there are definite flaws in the democratic system. I mean, personally, and I am just speaking for myself, you know, I think local democracy is, if anything, you know, stronger and more worthwhile taking part in than, you know, national democracy such as it is now. Obviously, there are issues that could perhaps be fixed, but with the way things are now, yeah, I mean, I definitely go out and vote in the mayoral election, the Weka election, and your council elections as well. I mean, this is such a great way to have a direct say over what happens, you know, on your doorstep. I mean, in terms of who I'll be voting for, I mean, I don't want to, you know, sway people by potentially saying, and, you know, I want to point out I'm not a political expert in any way, shape or form. So please, you know, don't take my word for it. Go and do your own research. You know, all the candidates, there's dozens of hustings events taking place over the next few weeks. So, you know, if you want to know who to vote for, go along to a hustings and hear it from the candidates themselves, what they're planning to do, and make a choice based on that.
Well, one of the things I've noticed is that we've got most of the candidates. Well, the main candidates really are Marvin Rees, who's the incumbent Labour mayor. Mm-hmm. We've got Alastair Watson standing as the candidate for the Conservatives, who don't really stand much of a chance in Bristol. We are generally a left-wing city. Then there's also the other two possibles are Caroline Gooch, who's standing for the Lib Dems, and Sandy Hoare Ruthven standing for the Green Party. Now, Sandy and Marvin, mm-hmm. Of the three main candidates, are, should we say most likely, I mean, we can't say they all win, but they're mm-hmm. the most likely to, are both want to preserve the system of the mayor in Bristol. And Caroline mm-hmm. has set herself apart there, saying effectively that she will, as soon as, if she gets elected, she will get rid of the role of mayor. Now, what do you think the role of mayor is? Do you think it's as important as that, or is it just a sort of side issue? Because it's a big change that's happened over the last decade in the city, with George Ferguson and Marvin Rees being the mayors, and a kind of different role in the role that the elected councillors have.
Mm. No, absolutely. I think it is really interesting to see exactly how it's evolved over the last, I suppose, 8 years, isn't it, since George Ferguson first came in. I mean, I think that from what I understand, the mayoral role has changed a lot over the last 4 years under Marvin Rees, and that he has concentrated a lot of power in himself with the effect of sidelining councillors. And I think that's frustrated a large number of people in the council and in, you know, the Bristol public in general, which has fueled a lot of frustration and this movement that's emerged, I think first with the Lib Dems and now spread around some other groups to get rid of the position of mayor, which is, I mean, my personal take on it is I don't think that that's necessarily the best way to go. I think, you know, the mayoral position could work. I mean, I've already said I'm a big fan of kind of local democracy and, you know, municipal democracy, within which having a figure of a mayor, not necessarily in the figure as Marvin Rees has cut it, but of some sort as a kind of a leader, you know, it can work. Does it currently work? Well, perhaps not. But that's not necessarily a reason to just throw it out. It's a kind of, you know, baby bathwater situation. Like, there are flaws, but perhaps we can fix those without abolishing the system entirely, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, maybe. But, you know, one of the things I notice is that this is basically a US system that's now been brought in here, that they have a very similar system in big American cities where you have a single mayor who's got basically all the power. But there's another election happening. That's the Police and Crime Commissioners. Again, a very, you know, we can remember, anyone that's seen Batman knows about Commissioner Gordon in the Batman cartoons and the films. So we've got this Police and Crime Commissioner. Sue Mount-Stevens is the present one. She's supposedly independent, but she was, I don't know if she still is, she certainly was married to the chairman of Business West. So, you know, there are questions over really how independent she ever was. She's standing down, but we've also got quite a surprise, which is the Chief Constable Andy Marsh announcing that he won't be reapplying for his job or his contract this summer. So we've got both of the top police people disappearing. I wonder, first of all, whether you think, you know, that makes that may be to do with all the recent unrest, and it might be that they're kind of walking away from that. And how significant do you think the whole role of this elected crime commissioner is?
I think in terms of Andy Marsh stepping down, it certainly has come at a significant point following on from the Kill the Bill protest. So, you know, I think it would be strange to see that as coincidental. I think it almost certainly has followed on. But as to the reasons he has for making that, I couldn't really comment. The Police and Crime Commissioner is an interesting one, particularly at the moment, because there is now an opportunity to ask questions around, you know, what is the role of the police in the community? Do they serve every community equally? Which, you know, questions that a lot of communities have been asking for a very long time, but those questions haven't been voiced in kind of mainstream conversations. But now they've been brought to the surface by the Kill the Bill process. The kind of side effect of that is it put those questions into the headlines. And so you do now see, so one of the candidates, Cleo Lake, has called for an independent inquiry into the riots on Sunday, the 21st of March. And I think that's a very interesting move to see from a police and crime commissioner candidate, and it signals that, you know, if, for instance, Cleo were to be elected, you know, it might start leading to change, as I've described, you know, asking those questions about the role of police and the community and whether we can change those parts of that relationship that don't work. So I've not paid attention to the Police and Crime Commissioner elections in the past, I'll be totally honest with you, but I'm paying very close attention this year. I think it could be the beginning of very significant change.
What about your assessment of the way that the policing has gone? I mean, the thing is, I know you've been to some of these protests. I mean, I don't know if you've been charging into the police or anything like that. Maybe you shouldn't have been, or were you just kind of watching, standing by, reporting on them?
Yeah, exactly. So I was there for the website, the Bristol Activist, you know, to observe and to make note of what was happening, speaking to people and, yeah, reporting back afterwards, just trying to, you know, I've seen my role as just documenting what's going on in the hope that, you know, afterwards, when inevitably people argue about these things and who did what and who threw what, you know, there will be a record written or, you know, a video or something that I might be able to use to shine some light on that conversation. But no, I mean, I've certainly not been throwing myself at police.
I've noticed, you know, several journalists actually being arrested by the police, some then de-arrested. You know, this is a little bit worrying, isn't it? When you know, specifically if a journalist is trying to report on something and then they're actually arrested, sometimes incarcerated too, you know, put in police cells, then obviously they can't then report, particularly if they're doing work for print or broadcast media. Their report might, you know, just completely miss the deadlines, etc. So I just wonder, as someone that's been watching all this, what do you make of the way that the journalists particularly have been being treated by the police?
Yeah, so there are a couple of, yeah, very significant and troubling episodes that have occurred. So, yeah, the Martin Booth, editor of Bristol 24/7, was detained at one of the protests. He was later released, but, you know, he wrote a piece in Bristol 24/7 kind of documenting his experience. And, you know, I mean, he tells the police that he's a journalist. They don't believe him and they detain him, despite the fact that he's quite a recognizable person around Bristol. And then again, a couple of journalists from the Bristol Cable were not detained, but certainly harassed by police. I think it's just a case of, you know, the police who are there on the night becoming a little bit too, you know, wrapped up in what they're doing and losing sight of kind of their role and their responsibility.
But there was also I watched a recording of someone who was streaming on YouTube live the protests a couple of weeks ago. The police actually deliberately, he wasn't doing anything. He certainly wasn't breaking the law, but the police sent a snatch squad out to arrest him, which I found a little bit concerning. That sort of thing is, you know, it's going beyond, oh dear, sorry, we've got a journalist by mistake. This is a deliberate attempt to stop reporting.
No, absolutely. I mean, I haven't seen what you're referring to there, but yeah, I've certainly seen other videos online. And I mean, just in the last week, we've seen the news went round that the Met Police have pressured Facebook, to try and take down footage that people are sharing of police and arrests that they're making. So I think, you know, we are seeing a shift in the police at the kind of highest level with the Met an attempt to crack down on efforts to hold them accountable, whether that's through established journalism or whether it's through citizen journalism. I mean, you know, I mean, this a massive difference between protest in the past and protest today is that, you know, every single person has a mobile phone capable of taking high quality video and streaming it all over the internet. So everyone at a protest today, you know, is capable of taking that role of holding the police to account. And I think they're scrabbling to keep up with that pace of change. And I don't think the police particularly like the position that they're put in. And they're,
I mean, we've had this situation
back
in France where they're trying to criminalize the idea of sharing pictures of the police, which you know, just sounds to me unbelievable. That's just over the channel. But anyway, look, James, if people are interested in writing for your blog or contributing, what's your sort of criteria and how should they get in touch?
So, I mean, the criteria is, you know, as long as it's about progressive forms of protest, activism or resistance in Bristol, you know, it has a place on the Bristol Activist. I mean, what we're looking for, as I described earlier, you know, it's all about connecting different movements. So, you know, maybe seeking out those the groups or the protests that don't make the headlines, the kind of smaller scale things. And it's also about motivating other people to take action. So if you think that, you know, you've got a story or you know of something happening that is going to kind of resonate with other people and might bring more people into activist movements, then yeah, absolutely. There's always a place for that on the Bristol Activist. If you ever do want to get in touch, the website is thebristolactivist.com. And there's a contact form on there. Or if you want to find me through Facebook or Twitter, the handle is @BristolActivist.
Great. James Ward, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, cheers, Tony.